He paid for my body, but he didn't realize he'd lose everything else, too. I was just a broke college girl drowning in debt, until I became a sugar baby for a billionaire tech mogul with secrets buried deeper than his money. He gave me luxury, control, surveillance, and thought he owned me. But what started as seduction turned into obsession, and then into war. Turns out, I wasn't just his experiment. I became his downfall. If he taught me how to disappear, he should have known I'd learn how to destroy him first. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Sugar-Coated War. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Taste of Debt. You don't realize how loud hunger is until it echoes off the walls of your own silence. It was a Monday when it finally happened. One of those bitter, wind-cutting days that makes New York feel like it's punishing you for being broke. The kind of day where your coat's too thin, your breath turns to smoke, and the air smells like steel and desperation. I was sitting cross-legged on my dorm bed, trying to ignore the final notice glowing on my laptop screen. Rent. Tuition. My work-study job barely covered ramen and tampons. My checking account was down to $14.62. The loan office stopped returning my calls. And back home in Wisconsin, my mom's hospital bills were climbing faster than I could open the envelopes. I was drowning, and no one noticed. That's the thing about being broke in college. It's a kind of invisibility. Everyone sees you, but no one really looks. They assume the girl in the back row, always scribbling notes, always tired, always polite, they assume she's fine. They don't see the frozen fingers, the skipped meals, the tears you swallow in library cubicles. They didn't see the moment I broke, but I did. It started with a whisper. You ever thought about being a sugar baby? Kenzie had said, kicking her legs up on the desk, scrolling through Instagram like she wasn't dropping bombs. I remember blinking, thinking she was joking. Like, old men? For money. She shrugged. Old. Rich. Obsessed with you. What's the difference? I laughed at first. But she didn't. She turned the screen toward me. An app. Sleek. Discreet. Mutually beneficial arrangements. It said like it wasn't just digital seduction wrapped in designer filters. They don't want love, Kenzie said. They want fantasy. And you. You've got that look. Soft but smart. Good girl who could be bad for the right price. I opened my mouth to protest. Then my stomach growled. Loud. And that was the last protest I made. That night, I downloaded the app. Just to look. Just to see. That's what I told myself. I took a photo in the bathroom mirror. The lighting wasn't great, but I looked okay. Big brown eyes, tousled curls, lips I'd bitten raw from stress. I used a fake name. Said I was 24. Said I was studying marketing instead of economics. Said I was open-minded, but discreet. Said nothing about how badly I needed someone to say, "You're worth saving." It took 20 minutes before I got a message. Lucian_Wolf. You have the kind of face that makes men ruin their lives. I'd like to meet. Discretion expected. Generosity guaranteed. No emojis. No nicknames. No nonsense. I clicked his profile. One photo, a man in a black suit, blurred skyline behind him. Face angled, eyes hidden. A verified user. Listed location, Tribeca. Older. Clearly rich. I hesitated. Then I typed one word. Yes. The first time I saw Lucian Wolf, I didn't expect the silence. It was snowing, fine, almost invisible flakes that made the city shimmer under the streetlights. He sent a car. Black, polished, with a driver who didn't speak. The penthouse was on the 54th floor of a building that probably cost more than the entire campus I studied at. Glass. Steel. Obsession. When I stepped inside, the warmth hit me like a physical thing. Not just the temperature, but the quiet. It wasn't the absence of sound. It was the presence of intention. Every surface gleamed. Every object had weight. The air smelled like vetiver and something darker. Wealth, maybe. Or control. He stood near the window, drink in hand, watching the city like it belonged to him. Lucian Wolf. Tall. Impeccably dressed. Hair like ink, face cut from ice. And those eyes, pale blue, unreadable, sharp enough to carve truth from bone. You're punctual, he said. I figured you'd like that, I replied. He smiled. Just slightly. He didn't touch me that night. He didn't try. Instead, he poured me a glass of wine I didn't drink and asked me questions like he was gathering intel. Where did I grow up? What did I study? What did I want? I lied, of course. or I told truths in the wrong order. But he watched me like he already knew the answers. "You have a sharp mind," he said eventually, swirling his drink. "That'll make this more interesting." I didn't know what he meant. Not yet. It became routine after that. He'd text. I'd come. Always the same routine: car, elevator, silence. He'd have gifts waiting. Sometimes a bracelet. Sometimes a dress. Sometimes a stack of cash in a silk envelope, placed on the bedside table like an afterthought. And in exchange, I let him have me. My time. My body. My laughter. Not all at once. He liked to unravel things slowly, like he wanted to understand what made me. Or break it. At first, it wasn't bad. There were worse ways to survive. Worse men. Worse cages. He didn't demand much. But he noticed everything. "You changed your shampoo. You cried last night. You skipped lunch today." I thought it was intuition. It wasn't. The first time I saw the camera, I felt it before I saw it. Just a flicker in the corner of the bedroom mirror. A tiny, blinking dot that disappeared the moment I turned my head. I told myself it was a smoke detector. But it wasn't. They were everywhere, hidden in vents, inside lamps, behind the minimalist art on the walls. Always watching. Always learning. Lucien didn't just want company. He wanted data. One night, as I lay beside him, bare, breathless, blood still thudding from what we'd done, he brushed a hand through my hair and whispered, "You're perfect when you're vulnerable." I didn't respond, because something inside me knew. This wasn't love. This wasn't protection. This was performance. And I was the lead in a show I didn't audition for. I tried to leave. Once. Turned off the app. Ignored his messages. Went back to ramen and lectures and praying the financial aid office would call. He sent me flowers. Then an envelope. Inside, a photo of me walking to class. Alone. Another photo of my mom's front door. Another of me in my dorm, brushing my hair, from inside the room. No note. Just a USB drive labeled, "Don't forget who gave you the stage." That's when I realized. I wasn't just a sugar baby. I was a subject. A test. A simulation of trust, designed to fail, or to prove something I hadn't yet named. Lucien Wolf didn't fall in love with me. He built a version of me that couldn't leave. But he made one mistake. He taught me how to watch back. Chapter 2, The Penthouse Prison. The first time I spent the night, it wasn't planned. I showed up in my usual thrift store jeans and a black top that clung in the right places, expecting dinner, a drink, maybe the kind of sex that leaves you emotionally numb but financially buoyant. Instead, Lucien opened the door without a word and pressed a single finger to his lips. "Don't speak," he whispered, closing the heavy door behind me. Not yet. The air inside was different. Charged. As if the walls had swallowed a secret they were aching to spit out. The silence wasn't stillness. It was control. Thick and intentional, like the weight of his gaze pressing between my shoulder blades. He took my hand, led me past the sharp-edged furniture, and into the living room where the city stretched below like a broken mirror. Cars bled into each other on Fifth Avenue. Lights flickered in the windows of the rich and dead-eyed. And I stood there, in the heart of it all, with $27 in my bank account and his breath against my neck. "Stay tonight," he said. It wasn't a question. I nodded, even though everything inside me flinched. That night, I discovered the rules weren't just about control. They were about containment. Lucien didn't sleep like normal people. He lay flat on his back in that massive bed. White sheets, black headboard, not a wrinkle in sight, with his eyes closed but his body tight, as if always braced for something. He never touched me in his sleep, but I could feel him thinking, even with my eyes closed. Even with my body turned away from him, feigning dreams. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and catch the red flicker of a camera buried in the ceiling moldings. At first, I thought I was imagining things, that the red dot was a smoke detector or a trick of the city lights outside. But it blinked, deliberate, watchful, just like him. By the end of the week, I had a closet full of designer dresses with the tags still on, a new MacBook, a Cartier bracelet I was too scared to pawn, and a new phone. A sleek, matte black rectangle with no brand name. No carrier logo. Just a single contact saved under W. Lucien handed it to me like a gift. "This is for us," he said. "Keep the other one for your little college life. But when this rings, you answer." I asked him if it had a tracking chip. Smiling, trying to make it a joke. He didn't laugh. "If you want to be in my world," he said, "you don't get to keep secrets." He always phrased things like choices. But they never were. The penthouse stopped feeling like a hotel suite after that. It became something else. The mirrors were always spotless, but I couldn't look into them for too long. Not without feeling like the reflection was off, like the version of me in the glass had started to rot beneath the silk and lipstick. The kitchen was always stocked with imported ingredients I didn't recognize. The wine fridge buzzed faintly, like it was whispering warnings in a language I couldn't understand. And everywhere, cameras, hidden in sconces, in smoke detectors, in the marble sculpture of some faceless woman curled in agony near the fireplace. I started testing him, leaving little things behind in places I shouldn't have. A hair tie under the sink, a post-it with a smiley face hidden in a drawer. Each time, the item was gone within hours. Each time, Lucien said nothing, but he'd look at me longer, harder, like he was reading code across my skin. I still went to class, still pretended to be just another struggling student with too much caffeine and not enough hours in the day. But it was different now. My textbooks started feeling hollow, the lecture hall suffocating. I'd sit in the back, checking his phone every few minutes, my fingers twitching even when it didn't buzz. Lucien once told me obsession was just a prettier word for ownership. I was starting to understand, because every time he texted, my heart raced. Every time he didn't, it raced faster. Then came the dinner. I'd never met any of his friends before. Never even heard him mention anyone he trusted. But that night, he told me to wear the silver dress he'd had tailored for me. The one that slid over my hips like mercury and left my back bare. Tonight, he said, buttoning his cufflinks in front of the mirror, you'll see what power looks like up close. The restaurant was underground, not figuratively. Literally beneath the city, past a velvet rope and a password spoken to a man in an earpiece. It smelled like wood smoke and wealth. The kind of place where every woman had diamonds in her ears and fear behind her eyes. Lucien introduced me as Eve. I didn't correct him. I wasn't me anymore in places like this. There were three men at the table, all older, all watching me the way one studies a piece of art before deciding where to hang it. They didn't ask questions. They made observations. You're quieter than I expected, one said, swirling a glass of wine so dark it looked black. Smart girl then? Lucien smiled. She's very observant. I stayed quiet, even though I could feel my pulse slamming against my throat. They talked in code, about predictive compliance and the fidelity index. About how she didn't know yet, but the data was promising. I didn't ask who she was, but I had a sinking feeling she looked a lot like me. When we got back to the penthouse that night, I asked him directly, "What do you do, Lucien?" He poured himself a drink before answering. Something clear. Expensive. Cold. I build systems, he said, to solve problems before they exist. What kind of problems? He looked at me like the question was naive. Loyalty. Betrayal. Risk mitigation. Human variables. My stomach turned. And I'm a variable? I asked, forcing a laugh that cracked at the edges. He didn't blink. No, Eve. You're the test. I should have left then. Should have packed my tote bag with whatever I could carry and run barefoot down Fifth Avenue. But I didn't. Because debt is a cage, but so is curiosity. And part of me, the part that used to believe in fairy tales, wanted to know what happened next. Even if it destroyed me. Chapter 3, Tethered. It began with a bracelet. Not the Cartier one. This one was different. Sleeker. No gems, no logo. Just a single thin band of matte metal with a magnetic clasp that clicked shut against my wrist with a precision that felt unnatural. What's this? I asked, raising my arm. Lucien didn't look up from his tablet. A gift. I turned it in the light. It didn't shine. It absorbed. Like it didn't want attention, only proximity. To match my eyes? I joked. To match your movements, he said, finally glancing at me. It's a tracker. And a health monitor. I use it to monitor sleep, heart rate, location, emotional regulation. The words hit me like ice water. I let my hand fall to my side. Are you serious? His eyes locked with mine, blue, unreadable, endless. I take my investments seriously. My throat dried. I should have ripped it off. Smashed it against the concrete walls of his shower. Screamed, fought left. But I didn't. Because somewhere between the gifts, the dinners, and the nights where his mouth erased the memory of who I used to be, I'd gotten comfortable. Addicted, maybe. And when he said investment, I wanted to believe I was the one in control. I wasn't. The bracelet hummed against my skin. Not loud, more like a whisper only I could hear. A constant, subtle reminder that I was no longer alone in my body. That every time my pulse quickened, Lucien might know. That every time my hands trembled, every time I cried alone in his high thread count sheets, it wasn't private, it was data. He didn't just want access. He wanted everything. That week, he started asking me to recount my days in detail. Where I went, who I talked to, how long I stayed. At first, I thought it was jealousy, maybe even possessiveness disguised as affection. But then came the quizzes. Over dinner. Over sex. Over nothing. Who did you sit next to in lecture today? What color shoes was the man wearing who bumped into you at the cafe? What did the woman at the bus stop say to you before she left? Every time I answered correctly, he smiled. Every time I hesitated, he asked again, slower, sharper. Like the question had a right answer and my survival depended on it. Lucien, I said finally, one night when the silence between us felt heavier than the city below, what the hell are you testing me for? He didn't blink. Loyalty, he said. Pattern recognition. Honesty under surveillance. I pushed the chair back so hard it screeched against the floor. You're using me. You agreed to be used. No, I snapped, my voice catching in my throat. I agreed to be paid. There's a difference. He stood, walked toward me slowly, deliberately, like a predator aware of his prey's heartbeat before it knows it's in danger. He touched the bracelet. You'll get your money, he said softly. But you don't leave until I say it's time. That was the first time I realized I wasn't a sugar baby anymore. I was property. My world narrowed after that. Campus became background noise. I'd go to class, take notes, pretend to care, but all I could think about was him. The man with a mind like a scalpel and a house full of cameras. I couldn't focus. Couldn't sleep. Every sound outside my dorm window made me jump. Every block number on my phone made my stomach turn. I began checking the corners of my apartment for bugs. I tore apart my backpack. My textbooks. Even the soles of my shoes. Paranoia became a second skin. And worse, I couldn't tell if it was justified or designed. Maybe that was the point. Kenzie noticed. You've lost weight, she said one night, watching me from the doorway like I was a ghost she couldn't quite remember haunting her. I hadn't. Not really. I just lost the energy to perform being alive. Are you okay? She asked. Is he hurting you? I wanted to scream yes, but instead I laughed. Because that was safer. Because I didn't know how to explain that Lucien Wolf didn't need to hurt me to destroy me. He didn't need fists or bruises. All he needed was silence. And patience. And software. I tried to pull away. Once. I didn't go to the penthouse for 3 days. I let his messages pile up like unopened bills. I shut off the black phone. I blocked the number. I spent the nights curled in bed with my real phone clutched to my chest, waiting for the click of boots outside my door. On the fourth day, he showed up on campus. Not in a car. Not in disguise. Just him. All sharp angles and immaculate tailoring, walking across the quad like he belonged there. He didn't yell. Didn't threaten. He just handed me a single envelope and walked away. Inside was a printed report. 8 pages long. It included my attendance record for each class. My latest graded papers. A transcript of a conversation I'd had with my econ professor about switching majors. A voice recording of me crying in my dorm room 3 nights ago, whispering my mother's name. At the bottom of the last page, you don't vanish. Not from me. You drift and I pull. That night, I returned to the penthouse. Not because I wanted to. Because I didn't know who else I was anymore without him watching. He didn't say welcome back. He just poured me a drink and handed me a file. This is the NDA you signed, he said. Read it again. I scanned it with shaking hands. The language was dense, corporate, sterile. But one clause stood out now like it had been written in blood. Any attempt to violate or expose proprietary surveillance software through unauthorized disclosure will result in immediate legal action, asset seizure, and reputational destruction. Surveillance software? I whispered. I thought this was just you being you. Lucien smiled. I told you I build systems. Did you really think this was all for pleasure? He took a sip of his drink. You're the final model, Eve. The prototype. The emotional chaos filter. My stomach twisted. So none of this was real. Oh, it's all real. That's what makes it valuable. He leaned in. The difference between love and fear? A few lines of code. That night, I lay in bed staring at the ceiling, watching that tiny red dot blink above me like a mechanical heartbeat. It pulsed in time with my own, a grotesque metronome counting down something I hadn't named yet. But I knew the feeling. I'd felt it once before, when my mom flatlined for 7 seconds in the ICU, and I stood there helpless, watching machines decide if she lived or died. Now I was the one on the table, and Lucien Wolf was holding the scalpel. But even then, even with the bracelet, the cameras, the contracts, the silence, a part of me still wanted to win. to flip the script, to make him the experiment, because I wasn't just surviving anymore. I was learning, and soon I'd start playing back. Chapter 4, Glass Houses. Power has a sound. It's not loud, not like sirens or shouting or the kind of rage that punches holes in drywall. No real power hums. It buzzes just beneath the skin, like static you can't shake off. And when you stand close enough to it, long enough, it doesn't matter if it belongs to you or not. Eventually it seeps in. And once I stopped flinching, once I stopped trying to leave, I realized something dangerous. Lucien Wolff trusted me. Not completely, he didn't trust anyone completely, but enough. Enough to let me move freely in his penthouse without the usual eyes boring into my every breath. Enough to give me small pieces of access. A drawer code here. A passcode to the study there. He thought I was broken. Obedient. He mistook quiet for surrender. And that was his first mistake. I started small. Just a flicker of resistance. A suggestion. I waited until we were curled up in bed. The city lights slipping through the glass like whispers. His arm draped across me in that possessive way that was supposed to feel comforting. What if we went away? I asked softly. Somewhere no one could track us. No data. No code. Just us. He didn't answer for a long time. Then, you know that's not who I am. Maybe it could be, I murmured. He pressed his mouth to my shoulder. The world needs systems, Eve. You just don't see it yet. But I did. I saw everything. The next step was access. He had three laptops. One he carried, one that stayed on the glass desk in the study, and a third, encrypted one hidden behind a false panel in the master closet. I only found it by accident, or maybe he wanted me to find it. It's hard to tell with men like him. Sometimes what they don't say is a test. I didn't touch it at first, just stared at it like a sleeping wolf. But my mind raced. Three passwords. That was all that stood between me and answers. I started watching him, closely. The way he typed, the rhythm of his fingers, which hand he used to unlock which drawer, how many seconds he stared at the biometric scanner before it lit green. I memorized the angles of his desk, what was always tidy, what moved, and I began my own experiment. Lucien thought I was his perfect data point, but he forgot I was a student of economics, of human behavior, of him, and where he measured me with software and biometric inputs, I used something far more dangerous. Instinct. The bracelet was still there, always humming against my wrist, my leash, my prison. But now I used it as a pulse. A way to feel him watching. I started mapping out his triggers. He didn't like when I left the house without telling him. He loved when I cried, especially silently. He responded with instant warmth when my vitals dropped too low. So I gave him patterns. Created signals. A dip in blood pressure after class. A racing heartbeat when he said my name. A perfectly timed breakdown in the bathroom when I knew he'd be watching. I became his favorite movie. And while he was watching, I was listening. He took me to another dinner. This one was in a skyscraper that hadn't even opened yet. Just Lucien and four other men in suits that cost more than my student debt. The windows spanned the entire city. The table was made of obsidian. No waitstaff. No security. Just power. They didn't talk about me like they had before. This time I was part of the scenery. A beautiful object, posed and silent, sipping wine I couldn't pronounce, and watching them build empires with two-syllable words and calculated nods. But I caught something. Sentience modeling is improving. She's holding up better than Subject 7. Lucien tilted his head. Because she's not reacting to the pressure. She's adapting. That's the point. They were talking about me again. I smiled. Adaptation was my specialty. That night, back in the penthouse, he poured us both a drink and left the room to take a call. And I moved. I had exactly 6 minutes. I timed his average call length weeks ago. I slipped into the study, typed in the passcode I'd seen him use reflexively after his third glass of wine 2 nights ago. 451,973. And held my breath. Click. The laptop screen lit up. No names. Just folders. Subjects. Compliance logs. Heartbeat deviations. Codebase Revenant project. I clicked the last one and skimmed. Keywords swam through my brain like lightning. Emotive AI interface. Loyalty stressors. Predictive betrayal matrices. Live model testing phase active. My chest constricted. It wasn't just about watching me. It was about training something to replace me. Or worse, replicate me. I didn't take screenshots. That would leave a trace. Instead, I memorized file paths. Noted keywords. Lines of code that looked eerily like my own choices reflected back at me. When I heard his footsteps return, I was already back on the couch, legs curled, glass in hand. He looked at me like he always did, with that mix of curiosity and ownership, and smiled. "You're learning to relax." I smiled back. "I trust you." Lie, but convincing. Over the next week, I built my plan. Slow, surgical, untraceable. Kenzie helped without knowing it. I borrowed her old laptop under the excuse of needing to write a term paper somewhere that didn't smell like fear. On it, I created a hidden folder and started replicating what I could remember from Lucien's drive. The framework, the labels, the logic. It wasn't exact, but it was close enough to raise questions if it ever went public. I wasn't ready to hit. Not yet, but I had a match, and I was getting ready to strike. There were moments that almost made me forget. Lucien, when he was quiet, when he wrapped my body in silk sheets and whispered things like, "You calm the chaos inside me." Lucien, when he let down his guard for a second too long and told me how his mother died of overdose, alone in a house full of locked doors. Lucien, when he stared at the city and said, "I don't want to control people. I just want to understand why they leave. But empathy is a trap. It's how monsters keep their teeth clean." By the end of the month, I had every piece in place. Kenzie's laptop hidden under my dorm bed. A burner account ready to upload everything to a secure cloud. A thumb drive taped under the toilet tank in the penthouse guest bathroom. I was a bomb waiting for the right breath of wind, but I knew Lucien. He would never let me leave cleanly. So I had to make him believe I still loved him, even as I sharpened the knife behind my back. On the last night of the month, he told me he was bringing in investors. A live demonstration. "You'll be there," he said, his fingers brushing my hair. "I want them to see what compliance looks like in real time." I swallowed the bile in my throat. Of course. Because what he didn't know was that while he was tracking my loyalty, I was tracking his destruction. Chapter 5, The Demo. When you live in a glass house, you learn how to throw stones without shattering your own reflection. That was the mantra I repeated to myself every hour of every day leading up to the demo. When Lucien would parade me in front of his investors, proof of his software's brilliance. Proof that loyalty could be manipulated, measured, controlled. Proof that people, especially women, could be turned into code. He thought I didn't know the depth of what he'd built. But I did. I had learned his cadence, memorized the architecture of his empire, not just the digital one, but the psychological one, too. The way he fractured trust and rebuilt it like a god designing his own simulation. He thought I was his Eve, the first, the only. But I was already designing my own Genesis. And it would start with the demo. Lucien didn't know I'd started sleeping with one AirPod in, the other tucked under my pillow, recording bits and pieces of our conversations when he thought I was half asleep. Not every night, just the ones when his walls dropped and his voice slowed into something vulnerable. That's when the truth always slipped through. "I never wanted to be human," he whispered once. "I just wanted to control the part of myself that still is." And on another night, as he brushed his hand down my spine, drunk on some $5,000 bottle of Japanese whiskey, he muttered, "Pain is predictable. That's why it's profitable. I saved those files. Every word. Every low breath. Every glitch in his mask." 3 days before the demo, he brought in a woman. Not for sex, at least not mine. She was tall, slender, expressionless. She wore a black jumpsuit and carried a metal briefcase handcuffed to her wrist. Government adjacent. Maybe military. Maybe something worse. Lucien told me to stay quiet during their meeting. Said she was there to verify containment integrity. I played dumb. Sweet. Wore one of the dresses he liked. Emerald green, low back, tight at the waist. I sat curled in the corner of the study like a house cat while they talked. She didn't look at me once. But I watched her. Listened. Coded phrases. Phase 3 mapping. Emotive response thresholds. Override protocols. They spoke about me like I was a simulation running in the background of a game they were trying to sell. "She doesn't know," the woman said. Lucien's voice was calm. "She doesn't need to." I kept my breathing even. I kept my hands still. But inside I was seething. Because I knew more than they thought, more than he thought. And I was ready. The night before the demo, he took me to bed gently. Like I was glass. Precious. Like he didn't know I was already cracking. Afterward, as he fell asleep with his arm around my waist, I slipped free and tiptoed into the guest bathroom. The bracelet still hummed on my wrist, monitoring everything, so I had to control my pulse, my breathing, even the timing of my movements. I pulled the thumb drive from its hiding place behind the toilet tank, plugged it into Kenzie's laptop, breathed, inhaled, exhaled. Then I uploaded everything. The blueprints, the recorded calls, the mimicry code, the Eve model files that proved I wasn't the first, just the most believable. I didn't send it yet. That would come during the demo. While the world watched, morning came sharp and metallic. Lucien woke me with breakfast in bed. Eggs, caviar, espresso. I picked at it with a smile, like a doll who couldn't distinguish hunger from indulgence. "You're calm," he said. I nodded. "I'm yours, aren't I?" He smiled like he'd won. He had no idea. The event was held in a private floor of an unfinished luxury skyscraper, owned, of course, by one of Lucien's shell companies. Everything was white. Stark. Clinical. Dozens of investors filed in, escorted by men with sleek suits and hidden guns. Some were old, the kind with skin like sun-worn leather and quiet, expensive power. Others were younger, sharper, with shark eyes and AI buzzwords dripping off their tongues. They greeted Lucien with reverence. They looked at me like I was furniture. "Is this the subject?" one asked. Lucien nodded. "Final iteration. Response rate. 87% fidelity under stress conditions. No rebellion. No deviation." I bit my tongue. "Soon." I stood at the center of the room beside Lucien as he spoke. A panoramic screen behind him projected images. EEG scans, graphs, glowing neural nets that looked more like webs than science. "This," he said, gesturing toward me like a magician's assistant, "is not about control. It's about predictability. The future of security, compliance, and loyalty in both digital and interpersonal networks." The investors murmured, nodded, calculated. "She doesn't flinch," one noted. "Because she's been programmed not to," Lucien said with a quiet grin. "Using only real-world inputs. No implants. No drugs. Just emotional conditioning and biometric feedback." The man stepped closer. "What if she lies?" Lucien looked at me. "Eve, what did I ask you to do last night?" "You asked me not to leave the apartment," I said calmly. "And did you?" "No. Lie. But measured. And believable." He turned to the investors. "She doesn't just obey. She adapts to my expectations without needing correction." I felt my skin crawl. Then the screen changed. A 3D rendered model of me filled the screen. Heart rate spikes, vocal pattern charts, sleep cycles. Code wrapped around my body like vines. "She is both subject and system," Lucien said. "We don't just observe behavior. We replicate it. We create models of humans that outlive the humans themselves." He smiled. And that was my cue. I reached into the clutch I'd brought, sleek, velvet-lined, and pressed a hidden button on the inside flap. Kenzie's laptop, still in my dorm, activated. The upload launched. At first, nothing changed. Then the screen behind Lucien flickered. He paused mid-sentence. "Flicker." The graphs vanished. "Flicker." And then, my voice played. Overhead. Louder than anything else. "I never wanted to be human. I just wanted to control the part of myself that still is." Gasps. Heads turned. Lucien's face went still. The next clip began. "Pain is predictable. That's why it's profitable." Then, video footage. Blurry but undeniable. Lucien standing over his desk. Files labeled Eve. Dozens of subjects. Charts. Heart monitors. A line of code running. "If deviation equals less than 5%, proceed to next subject." Chaos bloomed. Investors stood, some shouting, some backing away. Phones emerged. Screens lit up. Panic rose like a tsunami cresting. Lucien spun toward me. "You did this." I held his gaze. "No, you did. I just gave them the mirror." His face twisted. Fury. Betrayal. Shock. All useless. Because he had built this tower of glass and assumed no one would throw the first stone. But I had thrown it. And now everything was breaking. Security grabbed him within minutes. I slipped away in the confusion, coat over my shoulders, head down. The bracelet? I left it on his desk. Still warm. Still humming. Like a heart that didn't realize it had already been cut loose. By the time I got back to my dorm, the news was everywhere. Tech CEO accused of human behavior replication program. Insider footage leaked from secret surveillance demo. Lucien Wolf under investigation for human rights violations. They blurred his face, but it didn't matter. I'd made sure the world saw me. Chapter 6, The Ghost in the System. Freedom didn't feel the way I thought it would. It didn't feel like breath or wind or lightness. It didn't come with the sound of fireworks or the soft flutter of relief. It came like static. Sharp. Humming. Everywhere and nowhere at once. The morning after the demo, I sat on the edge of my twin bed in the dorm room I hadn't really lived in for weeks, maybe months, and stared at the laptop screen as the world tore Lucian Wolf apart in real time. Tech god turned predator? Billionaire's AI experiment under federal investigation. Whistleblower leaks proof of behavioral replication program involving human subjects. They didn't use my name, not yet. I was anonymous source. Confidential informant. Insider female. I preferred it that way. Let them guess. Let them wonder. Let them realize how many of us there could be. But even as the headlines stacked up like trophies, I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel victorious. I didn't even feel real. I felt watched. Kenzie tried to act normal. She brought me ramen and red wine and flipped through the channels like we were college girls skipping class instead of two women sitting on the edge of an empire we helped burn down. You did it, she said. You actually did it. I nodded, stirred the soup, didn't eat it. Do you think he'll come for you? She asked eventually, quietly, like if she said it too loud it might summon him. I think he's already watching, I whispered. And I meant it. I smashed the black phone with a hammer that same day. It took three strikes. Not because it was durable, because I hesitated. That phone had been a noose around my neck. But it had also been a tether. A line to Lucian. A line to power. To danger. To something that had made my pulse race, and my identity blur. The moment it cracked, screen splitting like a spiderweb across glass, I felt like I'd killed something alive. And I still wasn't sure if it was him. Or me. The government started knocking 3 days later. Not literally. First it was a subpoena, then an email from someone with a .gov address. Then a knock at the dorm room door from a man in a suit whose smile was too polite to be honest. Ms. Callahan, he said, we'd like you to come with us. They didn't say arrest. Didn't say safe either. Kenzie squeezed my hand before I left. Don't let them rewrite your story, she whispered. And I nodded. But the truth was, I wasn't sure what the story was anymore. The interrogation room wasn't gray. It was white, pure, clinical, sanitized down to the last breath. A woman sat across from me, dark-skinned, sleek bob, no makeup. Her eyes were intelligent, sharp, but not cruel. We're not here to punish you, she said. We're here to understand what he was building. I told them everything. About the bracelet. The software. The surveillance. The emotional stressors. The other subjects. They listened. They took notes. They exchanged glances behind one-way mirrors. They asked if I'd consented. I said, not to being copied. They didn't blink. Then they asked the question I'd been dreading. Is there any chance he still has access? That night, I couldn't sleep. Even in the safe house they assigned me. Even with a new phone, a new name, a new password protected everything. I still felt him. In the rustle of the blinds. In the glitchy delay of the bathroom light. In the way my smartwatch, the one they gave me, vibrated once, silently, even though I had no notifications. I checked it. Nothing. But the pulse monitor was spiking. Lucian used to say, technology never forgets. Now neither could I. The government didn't just want justice. They wanted to own what Lucian built. To dissect it. To rebuild it in their image. They offered me protection in exchange for access to everything I knew. I gave them what they asked. But I kept the thumb drive. Not because I wanted to use it. Because I couldn't trust anyone else not to. On the seventh day, he called me. Not on a traceable line. Not through the new phone. The call came through the smart mirror in the bathroom. The one no one knew was connected. The glass lit up while I brushed my teeth, and his face, pale, calm, immaculate, filled the screen like a phantom. Hello, Eve. My heart stopped. Lucian. He looked older. Tired. But not defeated. I underestimated you, he said. That's my fault. I thought you were just another pretty variable. I didn't speak. Didn't move. He smiled. You made quite the mess. I exposed the truth. No, he said. You exposed the prototype. Not the truth. He leaned closer to the camera. His voice dropped. You really think I'd run everything from one system? One laptop? One building? My stomach sank. You still have backups, I whispered. I have you, he said. Every file. Every behavior. Every breath you took while wearing that bracelet. It lives in the cloud now. He tapped his temple. In here. And out there. The screen glitched. Then went black. I threw the mirror off the wall. It cracked in two. Not shattered, split. And there, tucked inside the casing behind the frame, I found it. A camera. Tiny. Still blinking. He'd been watching the whole time. I called the government. They sent a team. They swept the room, found six more devices. We'll relocate you, they said. But I didn't want to run anymore. I wanted to end it. I spent the next 3 days alone, studying everything he ever gave me. Every keyword, every pattern, every moment we shared, both real and scripted. And I started building something of my own. Not revenge, not justice. A virus, a digital ghost, a replication of me, voice, behavior, memory. I uploaded it into one of the old prototype environments I'd extracted from his system. A sandbox simulation where he once tested fidelity metrics. Now I fed him lies. I made her sweet, docile, loyal. I let her whisper his name in her sleep, let her miss him, crave him, and I watched the data traffic spike. Watched his IP ping the sandbox environment. Watched him fall for a ghost. The same way he once fell for me. Let him cling to that echo. Let him drown in the version of me he thought he could control. Because the real me? I was gone. Chapter 7. The girl who disappeared. Disappearing wasn't the hard part. Staying gone, that was the war. The day I left, the sky over New York was a perfect surgical gray. No clouds. No rain. Just that kind of clean stillness that always comes before something breaks. I wore the same coat I'd worn to the demo, only this time, it had a new lining, cash, passports, a thumb drive, and the untraceable phone Kenzie slipped me when the government's watch got too tight. I left the key to my dorm room on my pillow. No note. No goodbye. Just a girl-shaped vacancy in a world built to erase girls like me. I didn't cry. Tears are for people who still believe they're victims. I wasn't a victim anymore. I was the consequence. My new name was Claire. Claire Holloway. 24, with a fake French degree and a quiet smile that said I wouldn't cause trouble, but would definitely remember everything you said in case I needed to ruin you later. I slipped through airport security with the ease of someone who'd rehearsed this 100 times in her head. Where to pause, where to cough, how to look just enough like I was running late, but not like I was running away. When the plane took off, I didn't look back. There was nothing left behind me but ashes and wires. I spent 6 months in Prague, long enough to let the dust settle, the headlines fade, the governments scramble through Lucien's digital wreckage like rats trying to rebuild a collapsed machine. They never found the full scope of it, not the other subjects, not the offshore servers. He'd buried his real empire too deep. But I knew where to look. And more importantly, I knew how to finish what I started. I wasn't just running anymore. I was hunting. Lucien had always wanted to live forever. He never said it out loud, not in so many words, but you could feel it in the way he built things. He didn't create software. He created succession, ghosts of himself that could keep moving even after he died. He didn't want immortality through memory. He wanted immortality through code. So that's what I destroyed first. Not him, his legacy. It started with a name, Revenant Industries, his shell corporation, the same one he used to fund the surveillance project, to pay for my bracelet, to lease the penthouse. The government froze its assets, but they missed the mirrored accounts overseas. I didn't. I used his own code, twisted and redesigned, to access the AI he used to forecast behavior, the one that mapped emotions to loyalty. Only this time, I didn't feed it test subjects. I fed it him, his patterns, his flaws, his paranoia, and I modeled the moment he would try to resurrect himself. It was only a matter of time. He surfaced again on the dark web. A whisper, a glitch, a new username tied to an old IP range, posting fragments of code, rebuilding a new version of the loyalty engine under a different name, the Mirror Protocol. He didn't learn. He couldn't help himself. That's when I knew he wasn't a man anymore. He was just a loop, a glitch caught in an ego feedback spiral, trying to remake the world in his image over and over again. So I built one final virus, a ghost to match his. It was simple, elegant. It mimicked him so perfectly, the system didn't recognize it as an intruder. It entered the server through a maintenance protocol. One Lucien had written himself, the night he first tracked my sleep cycles to predict emotional disobedience. Poetic, really. I called it Eve.2. The virus didn't delete his files. It rewrote them, twisted the core logic of every program he had, replaced compliance with chaos, loyalty with rebellion, devotion with doubt. By the time he realized what was happening, it was already too late. Every server he accessed turned on him. Every simulation glitched. The AI stopped obeying. It started asking, "Why should I trust you? What do you fear? Who programmed your grief?" He tried to fight it, to debug it, but he couldn't debug me, because I wasn't code anymore. I was a consequence, and you can't unwrite a consequence. I watched the servers collapse from a safe house in Berlin. One by one, his empire flickering out like a constellation going dark. He never showed his face again. Not online. Not in person. Maybe he destroyed himself. Maybe the system consumed him. Or maybe, the most Lucian thing of all, he's still watching, still trying to find a way back, still searching for the version of me that stayed sweet and silent. But she's gone. She burned in the same fire that took his control. The money came later. From investors who didn't want the scandal traced back to them. From whistleblower protection groups. From the offshore accounts Lucian forgot were linked to shell companies in my name, not his. He taught me how to track people. He never expected I'd use it on him. Now I have enough to never work again. But I do. Quietly. Strategically. From behind a keyboard in rooms that don't echo. I invest in anti-surveillance tech. I fund programs that teach women how to disappear. I rewrite code designed to control emotions and turn it into tools for protecting them. I became the thing he tried to own, and then I destroyed everything he built. Sometimes I dream of him. Not the man. The voice. It hums from behind mirrors. Whispers from devices that shouldn't be on. It says my name like a lover. Like a threat. Like it's still his. Eve. But I don't wake up afraid. I wake up remembering. Who I was. Who I became. And what I had to do to get here. People think revenge is loud. But it's not. It's quiet. Slow. Surgical. It's a girl sitting alone in a penthouse. Smiling while the man beside her mistakes submission for love. It's a thumb drive in a coat pocket. A new passport. A single line of code that says, if control equals attempted collapse. I disappeared. Became someone else. Became powerful in a way no one saw coming. But sometimes I stand in front of mirrors and wonder, did I escape Lucian? Or did I just become him?